Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations, advocating for bold decisions to defeat the spread of COVID-19 and build safe, healthy communities for the future. Secretary General Antonio Guterres said in a video message to the World Health Assembly on Monday that the pandemic must be a turning point. For COVID-19 recovery and to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals, he highlighted the need for coordinated global action in three areas. First, he told the World Health Organization Forum that to stop the virus, humanity must respond resolutely and in solidarity. Secondly, primary health care systems and universal health coverage need to be bolstered. And finally, he said, it was critical for the world to prepare for the next global health emergency. The UN chief said, we need a framework for international cooperation and solidarity fit for the future. Turning to Yemen, to prevent a devastating famine in the country, the UN World Food Program, WFP, is increasing its food assistance to the worst hunger hotspots. But the agency's ability to sustain its response to the end of the year remains uncertain. Nearly 50,000 Yemenis are already living in famine-like conditions, and 5 million people are in immediate danger. According to WFP, every 10 minutes a child dies of preventable diseases, such as diarrhea and malnutrition. As the conflict escalates, hunger increases, with food prices rising up to 200% above pre-war levels. The WFP Country Director for Yemen, Lawrence Bucara, said that over the last year, escalating conflict, economic decline, rising global commodity prices, and COVID-19 have all contributed to an alarming increase in acute hunger. And finally, a Kenyan peacekeeper who recently completed her assignment in Sudan has been selected to receive the 2020 UN Military Gender Advocate of the Year Award. Having recently served in the UN African Union hybrid operation in Darfur, UNAMID, 32-year-old military gender advisor Steplin Nyaboga will receive the accolade during an online ceremony on Thursday, the International Day for UN Peacekeepers. Throughout her 2-year deployment with UNAMID, she worked diligently to maintain gender in military components by bringing awareness to gender considerations in the field. Major Nyaboga called peacekeeping a human enterprise and that placing women and girls at the center of our efforts will help us better protect civilians and build a more sustainable peace. Liz Scafidi, UN News.
I guess the gender wars and the identity politics have hit the United Nations. Oh, my God. Oh, John Grant. We have John Grant on the phone. I think John's here. So we can kill this.
I'm here. How you doing,
John,
Mike?
Are you there?
I'm good.
It's well, better here. Than the UN.
Yeah.
What?
What's up with the UN, with that report? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was there giving an award to a woman officer in the peacekeeping, sounds like the peacekeeping forces, you know, I guess for, I don't know. Jesus, it's a crazy world. You know, one thing I know,
you're trying to keep up is becoming quite a challenge.
Yeah, I listen to the, you know, listeners, we open every show with the news and brief from the United Nations and I've summed up that Americans, most particularly those that voted for Trump, Donald Trump, are spoilt brats. I mean, they're just brats. They're spoilt brats. They demand their guns. They demand their guns. They demand to be bullies. They demand the right to to, you know, to just lord it over everybody. They even demand the right to screw up elections, you know. So, my God, are you keeping track of what's going on in Arizona? And by the way, coming to
Florida, I know that is so ludicrous. It's unbelievable. Yeah, I know. and it's also being used as a model in other states, apparently.
Yeah, Pennsylvania, Michigan, yeah, Wisconsin. Yeah. They're going. They're having this road show.
Right.
And none other than Steve Bannon is the ringmaster at the circus.
Right.
I mean, we're blessed by God, Jesus, and Donald Trump to have Steve Bannon saturating our television airwaves in the state of Kansas every day,
wow,
6 hours a day. And I know the spoilt brats, all white, the spoilt white brats of the Republican Party, even if they don't claim it, are monitoring it out here in Kansas. I know they are. This is like a godsend on air, over the air antenna TV, free. You can have Steve Bannon blasting in your home and your kids' brains,
right,
about the president in exile, quote, president in exile, at Mar-a-Lago, and
right,
the steal the vote and how we're going to take it back with the help of, quote, the armor-piercing shell, Mr. Pillow, Mike Lindell.
Oh, my God.
Lord Lindell.
Talk about absurdity. I mean, we're getting up to my neck in the muck here. When you bring in Mr. Pillow.
I know. I'm going
to. Ah,
I mean, if anything. Yeah, he's the armor-piercing shell. That's what Steve Bannon calls
him. He's got the armor-piercing pillows in your pillow fight.
Pillows.
In other words, kids used to have pillow fights. Well, we fill ours with rocks and grenades and beat the shit out of you. Or like in some gangster movie I saw yesterday, the guys were putting pool balls from the pool table, and they were going to beat the hell out of this guy with a bag of pool balls. So we could put those in
Never
a Mr. Pillow, yeah.
Those fucking pillows cost $49 to $69.
Do they really? I had no idea they were.
Yeah, that's with the discount too. By the way,
that's with the special discount, right? Yeah.
Special
wow,
discount.
Wow, what a world, boy! And you know, there's Fox News. He's a Fox News feature, but Fox News has a whole stable of whack job, snake oil salesmen and stuff like that. You know, they have the relief factor, and they have the guy Gorka. Remember Seymour? What's his name?
He's still, yeah. He gets on everyone's
Dr. Gorka.
Yeah.
It's Dr. somebody or other Gorka.
Dr. Gorka.
He sells this health relief factor, which are these two grinning fellows, father and son, who are selling this stuff. And you know, I mean, all I can imagine is like some guy in some old cowboy movie, you know, with his wagon, and he's got a mule, and, you know, they come out and he's selling a bottle that's going to do everything for them, you know, the common cold, your erections, or they, of course, didn't say it that way in those days. But, you know, snake oil. And, you know, Fox has a whole stable of these people who are selling the viewers, you know, remedies for this, for that, you know.
Well, this isn't Fox. This is Real America's Voice. I have it on my TV. It's called realamericasvoice.news.
Well, Real America's Voice, let me tell you, is a voice laden with a lot of bullshit, you know, and as Harry Frankfurt said, you know, the most salient feature of American culture is there's so much bullshit, you know, period.
Yeah, this is bullshit.
And it's getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And, you know, you look at this. I'm sorry, go ahead. Did I interrupt?
You know, I guess Pennsylvania has a particular amount of rage and craziness, too.
Oh.
I was, anytime anytime Pennsylvania comes up on Steve Bannon's show, it's War Room. The name of the show is War Room.
Well, you know,
pandemic.
I think we should put into our school curriculums that you should have English, history, mathematics, and anger management.
Yeah.
Those should be the four
anger
things.
Well, that would be
a whole curriculum
on anger
management segue into the critical thinking curriculum, you know.
Oh, I discriminate. It's George Floyd Day here, you know, everywhere in the country, if not good parts of the world. I think on George Floyd Day, we should have anger management for whites only.
So.
Especially spoiled white brats out here in goddamn Kansas and Pennsylvania.
That's like my good old friend Tom. Yeah.
What's that? What he?
Well, good old
Tom,
friend Tom. He's an agam, and he always said for the good of humanity that all white males should give up their right to vote.
Yeah.
It was a joke.
Yeah, right.
You know, and Tom was pretty much of a certified card-carrying leftist. So,
That's too bad. We need to keep him around. That's a good
point. Well,
he
passed, unfortunately.
Yeah, right.
Tom left us. He was a really good man. But anyway, it's just
I have
so
a
deep.
I have
like
a,
with
I
this
have...
Arizona thing you're talking. The Arizona. It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I saw pictures of it, and it's, you know, very official looking. There's like barriers, and there must be 40 people in this like gymnasium or something. And there's sections. There's blue desks and red desks and green desks. And it's like, holy shit, man, this looks like quite an operation. And, if they have such a visually impressive operation, of course whatever they do has got to be pretty good, right?
Well.
Well, maybe not.
If you're a simple-minded brat, a white brat.
There you go.
Yeah,
a simple-minded brat. An SMB, yes.
Just like the man running the show, Donnie Trump. I mean, you know, he's a simple-minded brat, too. That's
he's a big one.
So,
Yeah,
it is ridiculous. And Cyber Ninjas, folks, is the tech security, the internet security company or some company. No batting record whatsoever, I think, except in one county in Fulton County, Georgia, and in Pittsburgh. Cyber Ninjas, ran by a guy named Doug Logan. I'm reading from my notes here.
It's actually called Cyber Ninjas?
Yep. It was, and Doug Logan, who is a principal runner of a, he's like a CFO, CEO, COO, CEO something of Cyber Ninjas, which is running this Arizona account.
Well, that gives me
he's
an awful lot
discovered.
Of confidence, let me tell you, yeah.
Oh, and this dovetails nicely. I'm going to have to add to the upcoming article being released in Discomfort, our in-house magazine,
right.
Discomfort Magazine. Of
right.
course, we have an article by the great John Grant. Okay,
oh, of course,
and he goes into the thing about QAnon.
QAnon.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, guess what?
Yeah.
QAnon is you deal with it in your upcoming piece.
Well, he's appeared
out
again
here
now.
Soon.
He's back, right?
Yeah, Doug Logan, CEO or head honcho at Cyber Ninja, has been discovered seeking wisdom from QAnon's Ron Watkins.
Ron Watkins was a feature of that. What is it? Q into the
into the storm.
Into I was going to say into
it,
some orifice or something, but yeah, Q
is
into
it
the
into
storm.
The storm or something?
And Ron
yeah.
Watkins was outed as Q. Now he, I guess, assumes the role, but he. I don't know. All I remember is his father is a chicken farmer, no, pig farmer in. In Philippines.
Philippines.
I think he's a Vietnam vet, and he bought a pig farm, literally, in the Philippines. And that's where, you know, he was raised, I guess, Watkins, and then he moved to Japan. And one of his favorite haunts was Soap City, I think it was called. where you go, and he talked about it. He even advised a filmmaker you should go there and check it out, where, you know, you go and you, I guess, get soaked up with an anonymous semi-clad woman and you slither around in the soap. And this is a concession. This is a
Ooh.
Business in Japan that the QAnon fellow. Anyway, I'm not making a big deal out of it. It's just I thought it was funny, you know. That,
oh, no, you need to make a big deal out, because I think these people, these spoiled white brats out here in Kansas, they need this rubbed in their faces, because it's like you've cracked the code, you know, the deep code.
The point of Soap City was that this young man, 30s, didn't seem to have much of a social life, you know, if he, you know, haunted the Soap City. I mean, it sounds attractive to me, I don't know, but, you know, it doesn't indicate, you know, much of a social life, you know. Yeah, let's go over to Soap City. Hey, it sounds like a great idea, yeah. Anyway,
it's such a joke, because I mean, oh, here's the name. I was looking through my notes, Steve Bannon notes.
Uh-huh.
Pennsylvania, John Grant, check out a guy named Sean Parnell. SEANPARNELL. He's running for Congress in your state.
Uh-huh.
And I think you have a senator. Already, I think he's a state senator. Maybe not. Doug Mastriano. Have you ever heard of that name?
I don't know either of those names. Are they good or bad? Are they good guys or bad guys?
Okay, Pennsylvania senator. He could be a state senator, because most of these are spoiled white brats on the lower. They're on the bottom of the.
But yeah, there's a lot of them around. Yeah.
Pennsylvania Senator Doug Mastriano.
Okay.
He brought Rudy Giuliano into that county in Pennsylvania when Rudy remember when he held that press conference and the dye came down the side of his head?
He had it hidden some warehouse
I don't know where. Maybe that was Philadelphia. But
it was around here somewhere, yeah. He found some, it was like rent a storage or something. I don't know. And he had this, it was ridiculous. Oh, by the way, Mr. Giuliani's son is apparently running for governor of New York, is it, or something? He's a golfer.
Oh, God.
And,
golfer.
You know, this guy.
Another.
Literally, this guy is a chip off the old block and a piece of work, let me tell you. This guy, all his golfing buddies say, oh, yeah, the guy won't shut up. He talks all the time, and, you know, he says nothing. He's an idiot. And, you know, he thinks that he guffaws that off, you know. And it was like, I saw it on, it was one of the weekend MSNBCs. But anyway, I remember, it must be the same kid. I remember, I'll never forget it, seeing at Yankee Stadium, I think it was, some video of Rudy Giuliani with some people, and he was in some sort of mini box, and there was this kid, his son, who was, I forget exactly what he was doing, but he was the most obnoxious little prick I think I'd ever seen in my life. I couldn't believe how arrogant. And it was just came evident. It was like, and Julie, every once in Giuliani's, hey, you know, easy to, you know, and the kid had the rope to, and it was just really amazing to witness, you know. I mean, I had nothing against Rudy Giuliani, I suppose, at that time, but it was like this kid really made a mark, and like, whoa, this guy's off the hook, you know. And sure enough, here he is now as an adult with this big shit-eating grin, and he's running for something, and he says, he was quoted, I heard him, he says, well, people, you know, the question was, people say you don't have much experience. Well, I have, 33 years of experience. He's 35. I have 33 years of experience of politics. And we're all thinking about, what is he talking about?
Right.
he's lived with Rudy Giuliani for 30. He doesn't, the first two years, he wasn't able to absorb the experience, I guess. But in the 33 years, you know, he has, that's his resume. Yeah, I've been in politics for 33 years. And they're going, they're scratching their head like, what? And this guy is that, he's that bad. He's just a, you know, like a Fuller Brush salesman on steroids or something, you know. He's just, he's just sell, 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 and there's just no there there, according to some of the people who play golf with him, you know. But there he is. He's on the stage, and it was this John, what's his name, on the comedian. But, you know, and his point was that, sure, this guy's an idiot, but hey, this is 2021, you know, people like this get elected. You know, and you go like, yeah, you're right. It's like, welcome
I'm
to
sorry.
The new world, you know.
Remember
that character in history named Nero, right? Well, Nero was
a very
interesting character. Nero was a very theatrical Caesar. He performed, you know, that's why he talked about he fiddled when Rome burned. You know, he was literally a performer, would perform all around Europe on stages. And, of course, he always won and got applause because he was the emperor.
He always won.
Slaughtered. But, he, you know, he did. He played instruments and did whatever he did. And so, you know, as it is filtered down through history, you know, Nero played his fiddle while Rome burned, you know. Well, you know, as an analogy or metaphor, you know, that's an interesting way to look at it. Now, I got my other.
Did he really? Is there any really proof that he played a fiddle or whatever while Rome?
Well, no, I'm saying that's mythic theater or mythic memory, because he was a performer. He did perform. He did instruments and dancing and comedy. I don't know. He was well known for you know, in Europe, for going around the circuits throughout Europe. And, you know, and performing. So I'm sure he played a fiddle at one point or something equivalent to a fiddle. I don't know. But as I say, that's the way the sort of mythic idea of this history filtered down to us. You know, it's all metaphor. Rome, I don't know, I guess there was a big fire, but there was also the Rome sort of collapsing on itself, you know, the corruption, eating it from the inside. And meanwhile, Nero's out fiddling, you know. Well, if you think of somebody like Giuliani Jr. getting an office, you're going like, you know, this is very possible. Look what happened to Samoa, American Samoa. The guy lost the election to some woman, right? This was the other day. And he's not leaving. So he sees where the authoritarian idea is alive and well in the world, and he said, "I'm not going to give up."
John, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Samoa is an outlier. It is a distant part of the empire.
Yes.
What's happening?
Samoa has a guy who is elected there. I forget his. I don't know his name, but you know he's been elected for a long time. I guess they don't have term limits or something, and he is the leader. Well, he just lost to, you know, some woman in her, like, 60s, 70s, you know, and, you know, this is Samoa. They voted her in. And he says, well, I'm not leaving. And he refuses to leave. So what are they going to do, call in the U.S. Marines? I don't know. What do you do here, you know? And he just won't leave. And then, of course, you got Yevtushenko, whatever his name is, in. You know, these authoritarians showing off their muscle in Belarusia, Lev Dushenkov, I guess that's his name. He's considered the last dictator in Europe or something. He just hijacked a plane. A Irish airliner was going over Belarusian airspace, was about to go into Lithuanian airspace where it was going to end up flying, and they sent up a jet, a military jet, and ordered the plane to land in Belarusia. They said there was a bomb on board, and they had to land immediately, and the plane landed, and they got all the luggage out and acted as if there was a bomb. But then they arrested, the point of the hijacking, they arrested a journalist who has been writing all kinds of things about this dictator, Yevtushenko. And they snatched him right out of the plane. And then the next thing you know, he's giving a video confession, and he's been beaten and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And this just,
Jesus.
I mean, blatantly happened. All European countries are preventing their airlines from flying to Belarusia, and they aren't accepting Belarusian planes. So Belarusia has been cut off. But, you know, at some point, these authoritarians say, well, fuck it. After a while, the U.S. can't put embargoes on everybody, right? And then we'd be ultimately embargoing ourselves. You know, it's like, what the hell? So at what point does it all become sort of absurd? And, you know, the consensus in the world is, well, fuck it. Democracy doesn't work. Let's go with the thug government. You know, and that's what, of course, Donald Trump was trying to do and still trying to do, I assume. And, you know, there's a trend headed in that direction. This is the big story in the world right now. And, you know, it's happening right here, you know. The process, it's a long, in the United States, it's not simple like it is in Samoa, you know. Little island, right? In the United States, this takes a long time. It takes wonderful casted and scenario, you know, mise-en-scene sort of events like the recount in Arizona, as we were talking about. You know, this stuff accumulates, and where it ends up is, I think, a really big question. You know? We're not in Kansas anymore, as they say, you know? Except for you. You are in Kansas. Mike? I think I've been talking to myself. Hello?
John Grant, are you there? Oh, my God, excuse me, it's area code 646-716-8652. We're visiting with John Grant. I think we just got dropped off here. I'm going to ring him again. I'll just put him right on again and let him know that it was my fault. I was running the switchboard. The switchboard is filling up. And the switchboard, right. We've got a number of numbers on the switchboard. I screwed up, John.
Good.
I get the wrong.
Okay, that's okay. I think I was having a great conversation with myself for here for a while.
Though. No, we got that. I don't know what.
No, I'm
what,
kidding.
We got all that. I started reading the area code 646-716-8652 number on the air, and we have several numbers on the switchboard.
Good.
You should
good.
Push one if you want to visit live. We got John Grant on the phone from This Can't Be Happening at thiscan'tbehappening.net. And, John, you've never been to Samoa, have you?
No, I
don't think you
have.
You've been all over the place, man.
Well,
Samoa,
I've been to some places compared to many, not that far. But, yeah, I
get
around.
I've been to a lot of places.
Yeah.
Iraq, Central America.
Yeah, people thought I was out of my mind to go to Iraq, you know. Yeah, like, John, what are you thinking? Are you out of your... Fortunately,
I didn't think so.
Well, yeah, there was a couple of moments where I wondered, maybe this wasn't such a good idea.
Yeah. right.
But you know how that goes.
Well, only locally when you stick your writing pad and your camera into places where people don't want you to be. Yeah,
oh,
as a reporter, it's tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know. You know, there is this horrible news coming out of El Salvador, where you have been.
Oh, really?
It's come up in The Guardian. Yeah, horrible news from via The Guardian newspaper.
Yeah.
There is a cop, or a former cop, who a neighbor called because they heard a woman screaming. They called the local cops, and the local cops went to see the former cop's house, and they found two dead bodies, a woman and her mother.
Uh-huh.
And then they started snooping around, and they dug up somewhere between 40, they think 15 to 40 bodies in the backyard of the cop's house. And this is El Salvador, and The Guardian pointed out that this is that there are 3 to 5 women killed a day in El Salvador, and it's like the most dangerous place for a woman to live. I did not realize El Salvador. Well, you've told horror stories about it.
I have my stories are mild against the horror stories I've heard. Yeah, I mean, it was just. You know, I mean, the most impressive one, I have a photograph of the woman, and she's telling us, and, you know, I mean, it's a wrenching story for her, but she's going to help these gringos out by telling us how she'd been, you know, her daughter had been disappeared, and that she was looking for her, and one of the places you looked, alas, was the body dumps. You know, these trash dumps where they'd fling bodies and people would know to look for people there. And she found her daughter's body there. And, you know, the poor young woman had been skinned and things like that. I mean, it was horrible. I mean, and she's telling us this, you know, her face is, you know, it's like, you know, she's not making this up, you know. I mean, holy shit.
No.
You know, I was with one of these poor neighborhoods with a priest there, and there was a, you know, the hand, they put their hand in white paint and smack it on the side of your door, you know, so you're marked. And I noticed it on a tin building, and I pointed it out. I thought he'd sort of shrug, you know, yeah, what do you know? And he was really disturbed and scared. I guess he hadn't seen it before, you know. It's like, holy shit. You know, this stuff's serious for these people, you know. And so, yeah, a little stuff like that. But, it does not surprise me that there would be, you know, in a place like that where killing was such a growth industry, if you will, and the psychopathic killers rose to the top in these underground police organizations and whatnot, you know, and the sadists among them, sexual sadists among them, you know, are valuable as tools in this kind of arrangement, this kind of government, you know, where you're terrorizing people. And, you know, you leave bodies on the street or in body dumps and skin them and show the torture. This scares the hell out of people. But unfortunately, in El Salvador, you know, it led to the growth of a guerrilla organization, the FMLN, certainly. And then, of course, that FMLN, everybody got sick and tired of the killing, and so a peace was established, and the FMLN has had presidents as a party. But it's still, I mean, the violence in the place is still horrific, in my view.
I don't know what kind of person's running the place now or what kind
FMLN presidents, two FMLN presidents, the first one, alas, I think did go to jail. So even the FMLN has corruption issues. And a friend and I went down for that fellow's, Maurice Funes, for his inauguration in 2010. You know, I have a plaque here from the FMLN, so I'm an official honoree of the FMLN, I gave a speech. They loved it. You know, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, but I mean, who is all right? So they had a second FMLN head of the assembly, or what?
Well, this was a reunion up in Suchitoto, which I was invited to, and I got this plaque, and because I was with other people, and so they gave me a plaque too, because I spoke to a veterans group of guerrillas, basically, and you know, it was like a little 5-minute speech. It was amazingly well received. I was kind of, wow, look, this is, you know, and I got a plaque. Suchitoto is in Chalatenango, which is guerrilla territory, and where it's a very, you know, well-kept, strong town now. It's a wonderful place. There's a college there that they started and all that. Yeah.
Have you heard of this town called Chalcuapa or Calcuapa? It's
Oaxaca.
A small town. This is a
It's
on the border, right on the along the border with Guatemala and El Salvador.
Okay.
There are relatives of people missing, mainly women, from as far as 20 miles around, going around, coming to this house, the Emerald Green House, where they found these bodies. And the fascinating part of the article I read is they've arrested him, of course. He confessed. He just confessed when they came in. It was the dead bodies. The ex-cop. But they've arrested 9 other suspects, and among them are the traffickers and former members of the police and military. From the article, fueling suspicions, Osorio, that's the ex-cop murder, alleged murder, also used his clandestine cemetery to dispose of other people's victims. It seems to me that... That you know what the mentality that you're talking about. I mean, it seems to me, how can you, when their children are fleeing across the border, how can you turn them away? I mean, you look at this man.
Well,
of course,
you're getting at the molten core of this, right? Exactly. I mean, consider the horrors of the Salvadoran War. You know. What I saw, little tiny inklings of it I saw, you know. But I learned enough to know that, the people who were empowered were the psychopathic sadists because, you know, what they were inclined to do was encouraged in order to terrorize people. So what does that mean in a tiny little culture like El Salvador? And the one thing about El Salvador is the most densely populated country in Central America, the smallest, and yet it has a very polarized rich-poor kind of structure. It's high, you know, its density is denser than Guatemala or the other ones. And so, you know, and you go in 1933, I think it was, La Matanza, the massacre, you know, where in something like 3 days they slaughtered 30,000 Indians, Mayan Indians, who were identifiable because of their native costume and because of La Matanza in 1933. You will never see a Salvadoran wearing a Mayan native costume. You will all throughout Guatemala, but not in El Salvador, because you became a target for death because you were wearing that stuff. So this is the background, and, you know, one thing, stealing land so that the poor only end up on the rockiest, worst land, and you know, the 14 families, as they call them roughly, you know, would take the good land and have coffee for commercial, you know, sales and all that. And so this process goes on and on and on until the 70s, the poor just can't take it anymore, and they start this revolution, which goes on through the early mid-90s. And then there's peace. But yet all of the horrors and the, again, you've empowered and encouraged the psychopathic, sadistic elements as tools. When that then gets regurgitated back into the, you know, talk about post-traumatic stress disorder and things like that, you know, what's the PTSD factor of a psychopathic murderer who's been encouraged to torture people, you know? I mean, does this person have PTSD, or because he's such an evil person, he doesn't? You know what I mean? So these things are all lurking in the accumulated psyche of El Salvador. And of course, they're going to come out. And, you know, you find some guy who's, you know, like, you know, John Wayne Gacy or something, you know, and all, you know, he's been killing people. And, you know, of course, Mexico has a horrible reputation, you know, certain places for the killing of women, young women, you know, poor women. So it's not unusual to El Salvador, although it does, I guess, you know, it's not surprising that something like this pops up down there. But, you know, you can see if you're in a town, you know, and these gangster types, psychopathic types, have accumulated power, or they're trying to accumulate power, so they intimidate you, and either you go along and become a chump and a patsy for them, or else you oppose them, and then you're killed or threatened to be killed. And
right.
The third option is to get the fuck out of town. And where do you go?
Right.
Well, you go north. That's the magnetic north. You head towards the, you know, Gringolandia, you know. Because, of course, Gringolandia has been fueling this charnel house of death down here in this little country. You know, we did that through the late 70s and 80s. There are, you know, Reagan wars in El Salvador, you know. Every goddamn 6 months, they had to certify that human rights were being improved. They did it no matter how many dead bodies showed up on the streets. It went on and on and on. It was a joke. Everybody knew it was a joke. And
well,
this is the culture that's been created. So, yeah, we should honor people and treat them with dignity who flee this stuff. Because, one, we had a lot to do with creating this mess.
Right, just like $4 billion a year we give to Israel, to Bibi Netanyahu. $4 billion a year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's here I dug up the El Salvador's current president, populist president is,
right.
Oh boy, Nayib Bukele.
Right.
Bukele.
Interesting. I don't know that much about him, but he's unusual in that he's not from ARENA, which is the right-wing party, which was popular for a while. And then, and of course, the FMLN became a legitimate party. And the last two presidents before this fella were from the FMLN party. So this guy came along as like a third party. And he's apparently quite savvy, and he—I think he's some sort of Middle East connection. I'm not sure, and he's accumulating power again. To me, it's an authoritarian vacuum in a place like that that people try to fill. You know, I mean, countries like that, alas, that aren't terribly democratic. You know, the center of gravity and all is to find a strong man. You know, this is Latin America. So he seems to be sort of carving that position out. He's an interesting politician, but, you know, this is El Salvador. You know, what are you going to do?
Well, I'm sure they're saying this. Other countries are saying the same thing about America.
Oh, yeah,
the United States.
Absolutely, right.
I tend to worry that Americans, the spoiled white brats, will not concede this issue until we see our country on the equivalent of El Salvador. I mean, here he talks about this President Bukele. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah.
He claims that the murder rate in this little country, the murder rate has went down from 9 a day to 3 a day, and that's because he's president. And
yeah, well, you know how they are.
And they're Well, the news media points out that local news media, and that's where we're at, let's hear it, this can't be happening, says that the actual murder rate is falling, but the number of disappearances is on the rise in a country. Where you said thousands disappeared from 79 to 1992 during the Civil War. The news media, he and his attorney general, Rodolfo Delgado, have attacked the news media's morbid reporting about the situation in El Salvador because they've reported that there might have been, that the government may have made a secret deal with the country's largest criminal gang called M13. This is the M13 that... Donnie Trump went on and on about.
It's their standard boogeyman. They put them on a glove and they wave it at people. Yeah. Ooh, MS-13. Although the criminal element in El Salvador, frankly, is very violent and terrible. Yes, there's no question about it. I'm not belittling or diminishing MS-13 just because. Donald Trump, et cetera, use him as a boogeyman for his anti-immigration line, which is true.
They are
bad, but you can't blame MS-13, or you can't identify MS-13 with the majority of the people fleeing north. It's the MS-13 elements that are pushing them, if anything,
It was a newspaper in El Salvador called El Faro, F-A-R-O, El Faro, okay. F-A-R-O, that published a bunch of leaked documents, which seems to be the only way you get news in the world today is through leaked documents.
Yeah, exactly.
That claimed that the government officials had convinced jailed gang bosses to, quote, pacify, unquote, the country's notoriously mean streets and offer political support in exchange for better treatment in the prisons. Others point out that the murder rate has fallen, but there's more disappearances. So,
nobody is a disappearance.
I worry a lot about that coming to our country, inside the country, fomented by foiled white brats with a lot of guns. You know, I really do think that.
I hear your concern. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
I've said this to people locally who I think are spoiled white heavily armed spoiled white brats. You know, I said, someday, you're going to regret your alliances when you're, putting local families in a ditch and killing them. You know what I mean? You need to think about that. Is that what kind of country you want, so you can keep your guns?
The slaughter down there is full of irony. Go ahead.
There's so much violence. In this country right now, one of the main sponsors on Steve Bannon's Real America's Voice television be a 2A first responder. That's Second Amendment. Be a Second Amendment first responder and join and pay. And then there was a meeting just outside of Kansas City. I learned of it through Facebook. It's a heavily wooded area in the suburbs outside of Kansas City, Missouri. Well, Kansas City, Kansas, actually. And it was sponsored by a group. I'm not going to say the name of the group because they may want to kill me. But the group, what their main thing was to have this like farm meeting. It's a meeting on an acreage of wooded areas, it's not only to protect the Second Amendment, which is, of course, under attack in these delusional, paranoid bastards, crazy brains, okay? I got to digging through their website. It's to sell insurance, to sell Second Amendment, to sell insurance in case you – and it's all get ready, be prepared. You know, here's as little as $11 a month you can get insurance in case you shoot somebody and you need a lawyer. It's like a lawyer insurance company. You get a lawyer for your when you inevitably get charged for defending your property by killing people.
Yeah, well, what is point this does is insurance right here. Become like a protection racket? You know, like
Yeah. I mean, and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, in the old days, this 10 years ago, you know, very few people carried insurance. And now Texas and now Kansas, Texas is just throwing off the gloves and say anybody can have a gun, can carry a gun around with no training whatsoever, no restrictions. And
you know,
Kansas,
ever since the Stand Your Ground law in Florida, it's gone that way. Yeah, you're right.
Well, that's a generality.
I stopped at a gun shop out here the other day.
Okay.
I stop in periodically, and it had revamped itself. It was, you know, before they had, like, older weapons. Now it was like the wall was full of these black, you know, combat-looking weapons of all sorts. And, you know, it was a different look, and it was like, you know, the place.
They're making money.
Yeah, and the first thing I walk in, there were some people hanging around, and I walked in big as day, and I ask questions. I tell them this and that, and I'm curious. Come in sort of as a reporter. I'm just nosy, you know. And and the first thing, hey, you want to spend some money? That's the first thing he said to me. It was like you're saying. I mean, they're making money, these things. And I fondled some of them. And, you know, I have a weakness for guns. They're an amazing mechanism. And, I coveted this Mossberger short shotgun that, it's like, you know, incredible. And so, you know, I didn't buy anything, but my point is, it's like this gun shop, which before had been a little mom and pop sort of fishing tackle place, was now seriously into like street weapons.
That fucker's chasing his bottom line. That fucker is just chasing his bottom line. He's making money.
Absolutely.
And he knows
no question.
He knows how to make money. He's going to make more money. That's the apology we make for capitalism.
It's ridiculous.
He's probably
one of those
whining. He's probably one of those. We have him out here in Kansas now. It's on that statewide news. He's whining because he wants us to stop paying that extra $300 a week on unemployment. Why? Because he can't get the workers to come back to work for his shitty wages with no benefits. You know, this is the kind of crap that drives me nuts about working class people. They don't even think they don't even think they exist. And I'm happy to see them when it's like they have to pull their pants down and show their asses and their genitalia to say, well, look, I need to get more money. I need more money and I don't pay my workers shit. Okay, and would the government quit giving them extra money? Would the government please
right
out there?
Well, now they're upset at this deal that Biden put through to help out black farmers, you know. Now, and there was a story in the Times yesterday, and it was a white guy with a big beard, and you know, he had all these really fancy big, you know, agricultural combines behind him. And he was pissing and moaning how this discriminates against white people. I'm going like, you know, hello. I mean, the world wasn't created 2 weeks ago. You know what I mean? There's a whole history of shit that went down, and you weren't quite aware of it because it wasn't going down against you, pal. And, you know, it probably helped you get all your system going here because – certain people were eliminated from the competition. But now all of a sudden, you know, we want to pay back, you know, call it reparations, call it what you will, you know.
Yeah,
it's in that ballpark. You know, it's like, hey, you know, you fucked over this guy for decades, maybe a century, you know, as families. And it's like we're just trying to, you know, level the playing field a little bit. We're not discriminating against you. We're just saying, you know, hey, you got a leg up because of this, and we're just trying to, you know, equal the playing field. But, you know, this is, as I say, the right wing acts as if the world was created 2 weeks ago, you know. It's like, you know.
Well,
and, of course,
when you were born.
Yeah, if it was created 2 weeks ago and there's the black farmer who doesn't have a pot to piss on, and then there's you and all your combines and things, and he gets all the benefits, well, of course you're being discriminated against if the world was created 2 weeks ago, you know?
Yeah,
but the goddamn
really,
world
really
wasn't created 2 weeks ago. That's, you know, anyway,
2 weeks ago, and you're a spoiled white brat with a gun.
There you go. It all works together. Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's a safe space for a bully. You know.
That's it.
I'm sort of sick of this. They're only literally out here in Jefferson County, Kansas. I only know two black families that have any land out here. And I can't get the local paper to cover anything about the African-American people who lived here immediately after the Civil War, during the so-called Reconstruction period.
Sure, yeah.
Instead, I get front-page paper. But they do cover old history because, I mean, they have newspapers. These newspapers
date
back to
the Buffalo Soldiers and that element.
No. It's worse than that. It's women in Victorian dresses.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm sort of that's how. I mean, it's usually the what I would call the local intelligentsia circa 1890. You know, it's the intelligentsia, the lawyers, the bankers, dot wives. You know, the proper people. You know, and I have yet to hear any news about the bottom. Maybe journalism in the 1890s and in that period of time was only for people who could read. You know, there is a thing about illiteracy was much more widespread at the turn of the 19th to 20th centuries. Very,
certainly.
A lot of people just couldn't read, so the newspapers published for the advertisers and the so-called smart people. I don't know, but it's just amazing how you were talking about two weeks ago, being born 2 weeks ago. I do give a hat tip to Rick Nichols, the editor of the paper, one of the local papers, for bringing up these stories. But he needs to balance the content with not just the know-it-alls that ran the county back in that time, but also what kind of people were living in the bottom, what kind of stories were there.
Absolutely.
And I tend to think that's – well, the historical society is guilty of that too, largely, the local ones. You know, I think now Pennsylvania goes, Jesus Christ, talk about the 1619, and then this what is this?
Well,
critical race? And could you? We got only
theory comes out of basically law schools and things like that. I used to have a book, a big, you know, anthology of critical race theory stuff, and it's all very highfalutin. There, lawyers and stuff writing about basically the laws about how race is. You know, W.B. Du Bois started this stuff about, you know, the color line and how the color line is put into laws and all that. So critical race theory is actually analyzing all that from from the standpoint of the laws that allowed for, white supremacy and superstructure and all that kind of stuff. Well, that may be too goddamn complicated, nuanced, for most, you know, people who are upset about this stuff to really think about. But what they like to do, it's like cancel culture. They get on these words one of their favorites is cancel culture. Used to be politically correct, but they're beyond that now because they realize political correctness applies to the right as well.
It's correct.
So they dropped that, you know. But then, you know, there's all the cancel culture. Everybody drops cancel culture. They don't know what the fuck it is, but it's the thing to flog them with now, cancel culture. Well, critical race theory is another one. Critical, it just sounds so goddamn communist. I'm just going to keep flogging it. It's garbage. It's absolute garbage. It's know-nothing stupidity is what it is.
It's the only way they communicate.
And I will leave you with a movie recommendation.
Oh, yeah.
Judas and the Black Messiah. It's about the assassination of Fred Hampton in Chicago. And the Judas is a guy the cops get to keep, you know, to work with him in the Black Panthers. And so they give the guy a car. That way he can get close to Fred Hampton by driving him around, because Fred doesn't have a car. And so he ends up, you know, Judas. He's the Judas figure in this equation.
He helps kill Hampton.
Well, he certainly, but it's complicated, and he does actually work as a Black Panther. He does both. He's got one foot. I won't give it away, but it's a very incredible story about a national crime where they literally talk about assassination. Oh, I guess I. Anyway, talk about assassination. That was it. 1968.
Next Tuesday.
Okay, bye-bye.